The lights are on red. We're away.
POD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. This is episode 241 for Friday, August 20th, 2010. It's Jules Cusack, and I'm here with Jim Race.
Welcome back to the States, Jules. You've had quite a little adventure the last, 3 weeks or so?
Yeah. And actually, I literally got home about 10 hours ago, and I'm pretty tired because we had a rough trip back. Like, basically, since Monday, we've had issues with travel, so... Anyway, but it was a fantastic 3 weeks, including, of course, the Brno GP.
Yeah, and those of you that might have the opportunity to follow Jules' photographs, he kind of gave us a photo essay along the way, including prior to getting to the races. The work that you did from Poland was outstanding, frankly.
Thanks.
And that just carried on in the same Pop Monkey Noir.
I like that.
It's a very cool description all the way through the Brno weekend. And we've seen the pictures you put up for Moto Matters. And as you were telling me prior to the show, you've got a whole bunch more work coming. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. I started, you know, with like 5,000 photos from Brno. And because I was stuck in Breslav, Czech Republic, on Monday for 12 hours, I just sat there and edited it down. But there's still a good 1,000 photos that are, you know, worthy.
And you were full on planes, trains, and automobiles across Europe, weren't you?
Pretty much. We did it all. And foot. Lots of walking around on foot. Especially in the Czech Republic. So why don't we do the usual thank yous and listener emails, and then we'll get into this.
Sure. Like to put a thanks out to Peter Chung. Peter, thank you very much for the kind donation. It's very cool, and we greatly appreciate it. This is kind of a weird show because there is no racing this weekend, or no, you know, major series running, and which actually, frankly, will give me an opportunity to talk to you about your adventures at Brno, because I want to hear more.
Yeah, you will.
I know the folks out there do as well. Tell me about some of the interviews you got, and I guess you're going to sprinkle those through the show.
Yeah. I talked to an old friend of ours, Andrea Olieri, who used to work with Liam at Dantin, Primark Dantin, GP squad, and he's now with Mark VDS and Moto2 with Scott Redding and Hector Fabel. And he had some really interesting stuff to talk about with motors and rules and just his views on Moto2. And actually, that was a really big topic for some reason at Brno. A lot of the journalists were asking the MotoGP guys about Moto2 and how it might prepare them for this was during the post race conference.
Sure.
They were asking about like how that might prepare racers now that the 125 category is also going to be going away. And they actually have had a lot of very negative things to say about Moto2, saying, you know, like, because there's so much less to set up, the race is not going to be really prepared as much for MotoGP as the 125 and 250 guys, who understood a lot more about their motorcycles.
Mm.
So, but anyway, Andrea talked a lot about that and just in general, like dealing with a spec motor and what that means. And so that's a very interesting chat. We'll play that. And then, you know, we talked to David and I had a great chat on the way out to Brno on the day of testing, which was post Rossi's announcement. So we'll play that. And in the post race conference, a bunch of people surrounded Casey Stoner, and I got to record that. And very, very interesting stuff there about all this front end issues. I also got to talk to Hiroshi Arayama at the test. And I record a lot of ambient noises, so there'll be sprinkles throughout the show. I'll do the edit this weekend and stick a bunch of like drunken people and
Right.
And, you know, just the ambience at the Brno's circuit is really something. It's really something, both audio, visual, and just the general feel of it.
And you're coming up very shortly on your third race in, what, a month and a half, something like that?
Yeah, it's cool going through three rounds in a row because it's like kind of gives me a taste of what it's maybe like to be with the circuit, I think.
Full time, yeah.
Of course, I'm not arriving there on Tuesday, you know, beforehand. I'm arriving there nicely. Like, on Brno, unfortunately, we had other plans because we were in Prague before that, so we flew in. We took a train down from Prague to Brno on Saturday morning, so I was there for FP2.
Well, I'm the early scout. I got to Laguna on Wednesday, and I'm doing it again for Indy. So I'll keep you. I'll set up your appointments. How's that?
Wicked, wicked. All right,
right on. So look forward to those throughout the show. I was going to listen to them, but I couldn't actually get them off our FTP site, so they'll be fresh to me. Which, like Martin says, is actually kind of a cool thing. So I look forward to you putting the show together, and I'll get a little treat this time. We did get a bunch of listener emails this week, and we've kind of been busy in a lot of media fronts right now. But I do want to thank two people that wrote in to us, and you two know who you are, but Cecilia and Jane, after we were wondering if there were any women out there that were writing in, I just want to thank you both for writing in and letting us know that, yes, glad that you guys enjoyed the show. If we say anything absolutely chauvinistic, please feel free to tell us off. and it's very, very cool. And I know there are a whole bunch out there, and, you know, sometimes we're just like guys, but whatever, that's what we are, obviously.
And Jane, say hi to Frankie and Dinky for us.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Chris Mesa sent us a link about Colin Edwards' new venture, and I know I'd talked about that before, but this is his new Texas Tornado Boot Camp, and it's basically a riding school, Colin style, if you will. You ride all day, dirt track all day, then you retire for dinner at the saloon, no less, which also doubles as a hotel, but it's very Old West-ish with brand new lumber. Sit around, enjoy your dinner, probably drink a few refreshing beverages, and then head back out again underneath a covered flat track where you'll be running minis and archery and shooting and all sorts of stuff. Very Colin-ish. And you got to love it. And it's kind of, you know.
Does it include like a potato gun that shoots T-shirts?
It probably does. Nice. You know, it's funny. It's funny when I was at Laguna. Did I tell you the story? When I was at Laguna and I was back talking to Colin, this guy walks by with a red T-shirt gun, and it was all weirdly anodized. And I'm like, Colin, dude's got your gun. He's like, no. He's like, Jorge had them build him one.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh, that's so good.
So apparently they both have guns now, and I don't think Colin was very happy about that. Anyway.
Can't Jorge come up with something original? I mean, geez.
Yeah, I did kind of chuckle when I thought it. So we'll have the link to that. It's TexasTornadoBootCamp.com. We had some more stuff in there too, didn't we?
Yeah, so Jeff Reeves wrote a very interesting little email about cost-cutting and who really gets hurt, or who really pays the cost, and basically it comes down to, you know, saying that the writers and the fans kind of take on the cost of a lot of the cost cutting, and his point is that, you know, with the less free practice, we get to see the riders out on the track less. With the engine rules, we get to see some riders pull in because they want to save their engines. It's a very, very interesting point, and, you know, thankfully some of that is going away because we're going back to four practices.
Mm-hmm. But we're going back to four practices, but the equivalent amount of time.
I know. But the thing is, it gives people more time. I mean, you know, whether it's an hour or 45 minutes, that's not the point. The point is that, like, hey, I'm at the track. I'd like to be able to see a free practice and then go have some beers while doing the second one.
I thought you were speaking as a team person. I'm like, oh, that's a unique thought.
No, I'm talking about the for the fans who want to see their favorite riders, right? And and different conditions and trying different stuff. And there's a lot more time for them to, between the free practice sessions, to talk about it, you know, review the data and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So thanks for sending that email, Jeff. That was I thought it was an interesting take.
You know, there was something that came up this weekend, and I'd been thinking about it but hadn't really pulled my thoughts together on it. And I think it was Toby and Julian from Eurosport when they were talking about the tires that Bridgestone is bringing. You know, they had basically the tires there were hard and harder. And the morning temperatures were pretty cool. In the afternoon, the tires were basically, the mediums were in their optimal range. And what a lot of the crashes have been this year are morning crashes, when you've got tires that are essentially outside of the range that's available with colder temperatures in the morning. And I think there were a couple of riders that mentioned this as well, but there is sort of a call out and a little bit of grumbling that perhaps Bridgestone needs to bring a third compound that works better in the morning, so that A, the setup time actually counts. You know, even with a softer tire, at least you're getting some grip, and you can equate that to what you're going to run in the afternoons when the tires you're going to race on are running. But it might help to reduce some of these crashes that we're seeing on cold tires, or, you know, hard tires in cold weather.
I like that. That's a very, very interesting idea. This actually was a lot of talk this weekend about this very strange phenomenon that no one has been able to explain yet. And Casey Stoner was talking about it during the interview that I recorded, so I'm not going to say too much about it because he explains it very well. But basically, that at all the events this year, it seems that the tire grip changes throughout the weekend. Front end feel changes, or just grip in general changes throughout the weekend, and obviously it has to be tires. That's the only thing that's changing. You know, rubber getting laid down on the track, whatever. But very interesting little comment. Somebody asked a question of all three riders. They all said the same thing, but they all had no explanations. And then Stoner goes on and talks about it some more. So we'll play that a little later. And the last bit was Paul Laver sent in a link to Motorcycle News. For those of you who are not familiar with Motorcycle News, they take a slight twist on on MotoGP news, and they have a very, very funny version of Rossi's love letter to the M1. We should read it here. I think we should just point people to the.
We should point it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a hoot down there. I spent a fair amount of time on their now exiled form, because believe it or not, it was actually too raucous, which I think is pretty funny.
Even for you, huh?
No, I wasn't exiled, but the forum itself was exiled from Motorcycle News. Long, sad, amusing tale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's still running quite well.
Wow.
In fact, one of the gentlemen that I know from there will actually be hanging out with us in Indy. So,
yeah, very nice. Cool.
So we at least got one Brit coming over. So for all you, you guys know who you are, the whole crew over there.
Why don't we play the Stoner thing right now?
Yeah, let's go for it.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk some more.
Cool.
I got to the front, and that's why he came past, and then he comes past and goes to the front and goes down.
Did you move at the same place?
No, mine was turn, what do you call it, turn 1, 2, 3, 4, second.
The right-hander.
No, turn 3. The left-hander.
The left-hander.
Yeah. This is, I was getting off the brake.
The first one.
Yeah.
What the fuck does, is it? Finding it comfortable and easy to say, but are you picking it up on your knee a lot? I mean, what actually happens?
Well, today's race, definitely picking it up on my knee a fair bit. Same in Laguna, actually. You know, it's not something that just happens, a little quick one and things like that. Normally when it goes down, and you have to try and down it back up. And, you know, Dobby gave it a hell of an effort. You know, it's a 10 out of 10 with that one today. But, yeah, I mean, it's... With these forks, that's the difference between these forks and the ones we'll use at the beginning of the season. If I went down like that, was it, I was finished. There's no way I could get it back. With these ones, because they do return that bit more, our bike likes that a bit better, and you know, I feel a bit more comfortable riding with it.
So, Casey, those front slides, they're a bit predictable in some ways.
once you start to slide, and you sort of...
It's not that easy. It's normally, you know, if you catch it quick enough, yeah. But if you don't, then, you know, it goes too far and you can't get it back. But, yeah, most of them recently I've been able to catch quick enough. I sort of understand if I've gone into the corner a little bit faster or if there's a chance I could crash. But unfortunately, you know, like today in Laguna, quite a few times I felt like I was set steady in the corner and then all of a sudden the front it goes. So, yeah, I'm getting a little better understanding of how to pick the front up, but it's got to go on me one of these days and I won't be able to save it.
So your 2-3 moment early on in the race, not moving from the fire on the left side?
No, definitely not.
Purely...
That was a big lose, but I had plenty of other ones
right
up until probably 2/3 race distance, and then I started to be able to ride the bike a little differently because it wasn't as much weight pushing it into the turn.
Fuel weight rather than the rear pushing the front.
Yep. Now, as soon as the fuel came out of it, you know, the bike started to feel a bit better, and I was able just to turn it with the throttle on instead of going all the way in there with the gas, with the brakes. Sorry.
Yes.
So in a way, Casey, you lose out in the beginning of the race.
Yeah, that's where I've completely struggled and seem to be struggling a lot more recently. That, yeah, I mean, we seem to have a bit extra weight in the front that doesn't sort of help us too much. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if it is because of Moto 2 or what, because the same thing happened in Laguna, that all weekend everyone starts to struggle more and more and more. And by the time you get to race, everyone's folding the front for no reason. So there's something strange with that. It'd be nice if we could get the bottom of it, but when everyone's having the same issue and it's not Moto 2 because we had the same problem in Laguna.
Well, that one is entire this month.
It does, but why each day does it get worse?
The British don't say there's no difference in tyres this year or last year.
No, but it wouldn't consistently get worse day by day until a race, so, you know, you'd get a bad one here or a bad one there and things like that, but, yeah, I mean, well, Friday it's all right, Saturday morning it's not too bad, then it sort of gets worse and worse. And
if something happens to the track...
Something like that, it's like our own rubber on there or something
Yeah, even just when we're here, we've had the most weird mix of weather conditions, yet you still have the same pattern.
I mean, just look at the last few races, how many people have lost the front.
Yeah.
I mean, it's phenomenal, the amount of numbers. Yeah.
Is this just a question of, this is where we are with MotoGP bikes, the front has become so important that's the only crash left?
No, it wouldn't be that, because it's been like that for a while, to be honest. It's been like that since I was there in 06. You know, sometimes, you know, even now, if you have it wound back enough, you know, it still relies on the rear, but as soon as you can get onto the rear, you have less problem with the front. But I don't think it's people over-pushing as well, because you can be going pretty slow around the track and just keep losing the front for no reason. So, you know, that wasn't a fast corner where Dobby crashed, and two laps later in the same point I lost the front there as well, so I was then very nervous and cautious of that corner. And
so that's the Honda doing it, the Ducati doing it. Is the Yamaha doing it?
Both of them crashed yesterday, but they're about the only ones I had this year.
Yeah, Vorgos was told tight, it's set.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, like I said,
you had a look at speeds today, do you see
it? It could still be something to do with, myself, I'm able to pick it up a lot more. It could be something to do with those new forks, like I said.
Yeah.
Everyone's now running Olin's, and they're all running the 48. I'm still running 42.
Yeah, they're all 42.
And I've got a lot more feedback from it, and everyone else seems to just keep going down. And once they lose it, that's it. So,
yeah. So they could be too strong and too stiff.
It's not so much too stiff, it's they've got a different top out spring.
Right.
So it basically just keeps the fork lower in the travel, so when you release the brake, it doesn't want to pop up so much. You don't have to keep the rebound wound up so much to try and keep it down. But that also doesn't give it as much travel to work with, so when you do release the brake, there isn't as much there. You know, it's sort of sitting a lot lower without a nice little comfort buffer.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Yamahas are able to use it better, or what it is, but they've been using it for the last, I think, 5 years or so. And so it's not a new fork, but... Yeah, everyone else has just decided to change to it, and didn't work for us. Didn't in the beginning until I started losing the front without any explanation. And then as soon as I went to this fork, I got all my feeling back, and yeah, no problems.
One more question about Moto 2. Laguna
Seca was the support classes were the same, basically on Dunlop tires, Super Sport and American Superbike, they're on Dunlops the same, but there could be collision between Bridgestone and Dunlop on the track.
I mean, that's a point, it's a theory, but you know, it's hard to prove, because, you know, a lot of the bikes that they're running there are also on street tyres compared to, you know, proper slicks on the Moto2. And, you know, we've been running behind the 125 class, the 250 class for years, so it's just, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint why the problem is. But I don't know, we're just going to have to see if somebody comes up with something. It's great. If not, we'll just have to keep putting up with trying to save the front end.
You said the problem is the chassis. Chassis setup in your idea, in your mind, is much more important than the engines.
Yeah, a lot more important.
Learning to
set chassis. Like Danny said, you know, it's something I've never really pointed out, but same thing, gearboxes. If you don't know how to choose gears, put a gearbox in, you just have to run whatever's there. You're not learning anything. You may as well go and ride the super sport class, you know, it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
There's no factory chassis there. You know, like I said, without a Prettier, without Honda, without Yamaha putting chassis in, then no one really knows how a bike's supposed to react.
Right. And it's making the gap between Moto2 and MotoGP bigger and bigger every year.
Personally, yeah. I mean, those bikes aren't made to go around here as fast as possible, you know, they're just made to go around. So that's about it.
Okay,
thanks very much, Casey.
Thank you.
Okay, so as you can see, he's you haven't heard this yet, but you will.
We always do that.
Yeah, he's very interesting conversation with him, and something that David Emmett from Motor Matters has been saying for a while now is that Stoner just does not get enough credit for just how incredibly smart he is, and that definitely came through this weekend when I was a little closer to hearing what these guys are actually saying instead of just the sound clips that people use or, you know, whatever. And Danny, too, actually. Danny was another guy who surprised me with just how articulate and how much he has to say about the sport. And these guys really, really, really think about it all. You know, obviously they're in it, so they think about it, but a lot more than I think people realize.
Yeah, you know, one of the coolest bits that I actually like to listen to is, sometimes in FP1 and FP2 when you're watching on MotoGP.com and there's no announcers and they might wander into a garage, you know, when somebody's coming in to swap bikes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's no announcers and all it is ambient noise, you can actually sometimes hear them talking to their crew chiefs and stuff. And that's very cool because that's not the, you know, writer depressed sound bites or politically correct things that they say, you know, sometimes, especially when they're pissed off, you know, or they're going through the motions of what's wrong with a bike. That's where you actually hear what's really going on in their head, and that's what they're expressing. So, very, very cool.
Yep.
So,
let me just. I wanted to talk about just the experience of the going to the Brno GP because. It was very, very strange because Laguna and Brno and Indy could not be any different from each other. You know, Laguna is just out in the middle of nowhere in a typical California half desert, half kind of, you know, sort of green, but mostly brown, rocky, hilly terrain, close to a sort of touristy town, I guess, Monterey.
Yep.
And close to the ocean. Definitely very California, very kind of predictable weather, I guess you could say. I mean, we've had some strange weather there, but in general, you can count on it being dry.
Yeah, it ain't gonna snow.
Yeah, and then you know, Indy, we can have hurricanes and stuff. It's in the middle of a very flat area, but the feel of Indy is, you know, it's a city that like lives and breathes motorsports, and they are unbelievably organized, and the track is gigantic and just really well run. Whereas Laguna feels like a kind of like a mom and pop race, you know.
Does it feels like a county fair?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Brno,
not to completely denigrate Laguna, I've been going there forever, and the events are still neat.
I love that. I mean, that's the thing I love about Laguna. It feels very personal.
Sure.
You know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic track that's built into the terrain, you know, whereas Indy is completely designed on a flat. It's flat. It's actually a pretty boring looking track.
True.
Whereas Brno is like, you know, it's it's in a region of the Czech Republic that's hilly, slightly hilly, but mostly forest. And I had no idea. Just when they say forest, I had no idea that it really is in the middle of a forest. Like,
sure,
you're driving down the bus. We were on a bus and like through this little road, and all of a sudden we're in a freaking forest. People are just walking out of through the trees. They're just walking out like zombies or something, off of campgrounds. And in fact, even sometimes when you're walking around the track, you're walking down a little path.
Yeah.
You know, these giant trees and this is the first European GP that I've ever been at, and the fans are so different. I mean, there's so many fans for riders I've never even heard of in 125 class, you know, and every time their name is heard or they go by, horns go off, people screaming. I mean, the hills were just lined with people that were congregating in little groups of little fan groups, kind of. I guess they see the flag. Somebody hangs up a flag of, like, you know, for there's a lot of, like, Jules Clouzel fans, for example.
Yeah.
And somebody hung up a flag and they just started lining up behind him. Every time he went by, the horns went off and people were screaming. I mean, it was just so cool. And then, you know, there's a lot of drinking. so there's a lot of and all these different languages, obviously. You get the Italians.
They're drinking in different languages?
They're drinking and singing in different languages. So, like, walking through the tunnels, for example, and I actually have some audio that I'll stick in randomly somewhere in this show.
I think the term that I heard before, mm-hmm. The difference between Americans and Europeans, was that Europeans actually had organized drinking, whereas Americans just did it randomly.
Yeah, that may very well be it. But anyway, it was just I loved the ambience there. I loved the track for both for watching racing. I think it's a really good track. It's hard to see more than, I would say, a quarter of the track at the very best places. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Laguna. Like Laguna, you could sit on top of the hill and see pretty much everything except the back straight and the corkscrew.
Sure.
At Indy, if you pick your grandstands right, you could pretty much see half of the racetrack. Here, there was really no way.
Well, you've always known that from watching on TV, because there are hills, dales, and dips all over the place. And, I mean, that's part of what makes up the incredible character of that track.
It really does have character. I mean, that it's funny because I've seen racing there for so many years. I've played video games where I race on that racetrack, so I know it really well. But, you know, but still being there, like, and walking, it's freaking huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, but it doesn't seem as big as Indy, even though it is almost as big, because you know, it's hidden, and like you go around a nook and then you see a corner and bikes are going by, and then you go around the corner. Oh yeah, that's right. It goes downhill over here, and it's very, very cool. Very cool place.
Yeah, you know, the tracks they always call fast and flowing tend to be more spread out. Strange that, huh?
Yeah. How about that?
Neat. And so you got there on Saturday morning for FP2, and did you get in real quick, get all your creds and all that taken care of?
Yeah, it was a pain in the ass. Andrew Wheeler, actually, who I ran, is very cool. I ran into Andrew Wheeler at, well, not really ran into, we kind of planned it, but he texted me when I was in Prague and said, "Hey, I'm in Prague. Are you there?" I'm like, "Yeah." And we met at the Vitus Cathedral, which is this insane Gothic building that I could talk about for an entire show. I spent like 3 hours there just walking around going, bah, and taking a lot of pictures, of course. And so I ran into him and I actually saw him buying a sausage from a vendor. So he doesn't always cook his own food. anyway, but he did warn me beforehand that Brno is makes what Monterey did in 2005 in terms of, like, you know, hotel prices going up and stuff like that. It looked like nothing, and it really is true. It's like everything was just through the roof. I arrived at the front gate and I had to go about 4 kilometers to a little town where in the town hall they had the credentials ready, And before I go on, actually, huge thanks to David Emmett and Motor Matters and for providing me with the creds. Basically, Scott wasn't able to go to this round, so David. So when I told David I was going to be there, I was going to say, "Hey, you want to meet up?" He's like, "Well, yeah, we can meet up, and I can get you some credits if you want." I'm like, "Well, okay, I'll take them." So thank you very much, David. But anyway, so I had to go down. It's like 4 kilometers away and back, and the cab driver completely ripped me off, and I went to like two or three different cab drivers saying, "Okay, the last guy wanted like $33 or something like that. It's bullshit." They were all like, "Yeah, me too."
I'm gonna remind you of something. I'm already completely prepared for this, but you know that sheet of paper that you get from them,
mm-hmm.
It does have GPS coordinates on it for where you pick up your credentials. I know,
but the thing is, we got taken there by a shuttle. There was no way to get there by car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the shuttle dropped me off with everybody else, and then I had to take a cab from there to the credit office. Yep.
Well, we're definitely all set for Indy.
Yeah. It's a lot easier. The credentials office is like at 5 feet from the main entrance.
Right on. So you got your creds. You got in. Was the missus with you all the way around there? Or she'd go ahead and wander in and leave you to fend for yourself.
On Saturday she decided to actually check out Brno instead, and she had a really good time in town. And then on Sunday she came for the full day for the racing, and you'll actually hear her when we play the video, the audio from David and I on a test day. She fell asleep during one point, so obviously. But she had a really good time.
Good.
And a huge shout out to Gordon Howell of Pole Position, because when he talks about Brno being their flagship round,
mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, we've been to some cool stuff that he's done before, but the Brno stuff that he does for Pole Position is amazing. We went to this Moravian cellar after the Sunday night race. Sunday race at night.
Wait, was that the one that was down in the 300 something feet down?
No. That was actually in Poland. The mines. No, this was just a cellar. It's one of the oldest cellars, or if not the oldest cellar in Eastern Europe, that's still you can walk into, and they just have these long tables set up with candles and incredibly cool stuff, good food, great wine.
So those of you out there in MotoGPOD land, you're going to have to follow the link that we'll have to photos, and hopefully Jules will get more up so that he can have a little bit of the ambiance for you all down there.
Yeah, no, what I'm going to do is I'll pick some choice photos from the Poland and Czech Republic trip that we did, and put them on Flickr somewhere. So got to the track. I mean, I literally we got off the train and hopped on the shuttle and got the creds, got in there, went to the media room, met up with David. It's just cool that the place is just it's a very, very big media room, and pretty much everybody's there, from the BBC guys to Eurosport. Everybody's just hanging out, getting ready. Most of those guys hang out right there, writing their stuff, and the photographers will go out and just start roaming.
It is funny. It's kind of just a small world in the media room. It's
it
like,
is.
Hey,
yes.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah. And then then I went out, and of course it was gray. And my goal for FP2 was just to orient myself around the track, because unlike Laguna Seca or Indy, which have a lot of entrances into the areas where you can take photos from,
sure,
there's very few actually at Brno. So you really have to like plan your route out. Like you can enter, and then you're once you start walking, you're kind of stuck until maybe halfway around the track there's another gate, or a way to go under the track to the other side. So that was really FP2 for me, was just walking around, looking for interesting angles and stuff like that, and figuring out how to move around. Once I figured that out, it was pretty easy. Of course, there was 125s MotoGP and Moto2. 125's really suffered on this trip. I have very little photos from that because I used them to walk.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, qualifying, weather completely changed. So we had the forecast was looking so bad. All week I was checking the forecast and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so bad because I didn't bring enough protection for the camera gear for a full-on wet. And it looked like it was going to be thunderstorms and pouring rain. And we got very little, actually, we got rained on very little.
Yeah, amazing.
It was kind of, but it was definitely like cold, hot, humid, all that rains, but we didn't get, and it rained mostly at night. And of course, the 125 guys got kind of caught out with a weird race. But everybody else had pretty much dry conditions.
Indeed, indeed. And even with that, and one of the reasons we're kind of not this is not even to be considered a filler, but as we all kind of know, the GP wasn't that exciting. But continue on. I want to hear more.
Okay. So let's see. So why don't we play the interview with Andrea now? Because that's the one we did on. Saturday, and so Andrea Oliari used to be with Dantin. Actually, he used to be also with I think Sebastian Porto.
I think he was too.
And yeah, he was.
Massive fan of Midwestern steaks.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he's a really big guy, and one of the fun, like, I mean, tall. Like,
yeah,
I'm not talking like fat or anything like that. He's a very tall guy, and one of the funniest things was when I. Apologies to the other team, but I'm not even going to mention who they are. But so we're talking, and we got actually, it starts pouring in the middle of the interview, and you actually hear us saying, "Whoa!" because it just came down out of nowhere. And we go in, and he's next door to another team, and they all start walking in, and they're all so much smaller than he is. I couldn't help but just laugh to myself. Just it was weird.
The March of the Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, pretty much. anyway, so let's put that on, and because Andrea has a lot of cool stuff to say about Moto 2, and then we'll get back to my trip.
Awesome. Look forward to hearing it.
Okay.
Hi, this is Jules from GPOD, and I'm with our old friend Andrea Oliari, who's now with Mark VDS in Moto 2. So, you guys said you had the best qualifying of the season?
Yeah, so far we had a good weekend so far, and we're pretty happy about the performances. You know, the Moto 2 this year is pretty packed.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be 11th finally is pretty good, so we're supposed to have a good race. You know, today, we don't know for the weather condition because since yesterday changed a lot. Yeah. Yesterday was sunny and everything was clear. Today we expected to have this kind of damp weather.
The whole day?
Well,
I saw
looks like it's going to change in a while, but here sometimes you never know.
Yeah, and I know. I noticed
the forest here around and nothing for the rest. All the riders are good. Somehow. I mean, Scott is pretty confident because of yesterday. He had a good qualifying and some mistake on his fastest lap.
Uh-huh.
So he said that could have been better, but okay. We had that. And now also Hector is pretty confident because he had a great warm-up. His best position ever, I think. Not remembering well, but maybe I'm right.
Cool.
And nothing. For the rest, we look forward to the race.
This track is actually really good for another two race because it's so wide, right?
Yeah.
It's probably the widest track he has been at so far.
Yeah, I think it's the widest one. But actually, this one makes the track pretty tricky also.
Yeah?
Yeah, because looks like there are many lines to follow, but actually there is just one.
Is that because the bikes are so similar, you think?
No, this has always been like that. I mean, if you want to be fast here in this kind of track, you have to be pretty smooth and precise, mainly.
And on the smaller bikes, it's the 990s used to be able to do...
Excuse me?
The 990s used to be able to do some pretty funky things when they were running around this track. I remember, like, you know, back in 2003, 2004. But the smaller bikes, I imagine, have the same kind of lines.
Yeah, but anyway, if you, I personally think if you want really want to be fast on lap time, you have to be smooth in this track, and there is just not many lines to go on. You know, so you can enjoy, you can do tricky things and whatever. But I think that if you really want to go for a lap time, you gotta be precise. And so all those guys, like you can see, Biaggi in Superbike is always special here.
Yes.
And Biaggi in the old days in MotoGP was always special in this kind of track because. I really think it suits very well to him because he rides like that, so...
That's an excellent point, because that's his style. That's his style.
That's his style, and it suits perfectly in this kind of track. He always did with all the bikes he rode, so have to be something related, you know, to the style and whatever.
Can you remember, we had a great conversation yesterday about the differences between... going from a 250 bike to a MotoGP bike that's, you know, standardized. Because you worked on, the big bikes, you worked on 250s, and now you're working on a standardized bike. And as a data guy, it must be interesting because you have to be much more precise about all the adjustments, right? Because the bikes are so similar.
Well...
What chassis do you guys run?
We run the Suter bike.
Okay,
We run the Suter bike. So the bike, the idea of this kind of bikes are a GP bike, but actually, I think we can't really consider this kind of bike as a GP bike because it's not, it's a prototype chassis on a kind of standard engine. So I can't really consider this kind of bike as a proper prototype.
Okay, but the Aprilia 250s, in the 250s it was pretty much all Aprilias.
Yeah.
And there were two types of bikes really, the top bike and then the rest, right?
Yeah, but just consider a bike as a bike and not the differences between LE and that was in the early days, in the old days for the RSA. I mean, a GP bike has certain things like, you know, that you can adjust whatever you want. That's the main idea, you know?
Yeah.
That's the main idea. This doesn't happen in this kind of category. You can do whatever you want for the chassis and the fairings, but you're pretty limited in everything else, you know.
So the only thing you can't even change the gears. That's the most.
No, this is a pretty tricky thing.
Yeah.
Okay, you had an approach to a GP bike and you say, okay, this is a prototype, I can do whatever.
Because I thought that they were going to originally allow like cassette.
Let's say that the gearbox is not the standard CBR gearbox because we are talking about a CBR engine 600. They get the first and second, if I don't remember wrong, longer.
Okay.
But I personally think the first is not enough longer.
Oh yeah.
And we never use the first gear.
Really?
No. Just to start and that's it. Okay. We are talking about an engine that have a lot more torque than two strokes. So the range, the power range is wider.
Yeah.
So sometimes, or not sometimes, it always is available to use the second gear as the lower one because it's pretty torquey and it pulls you out of the corner immediately. But sometimes it's strange because you would like to suit the gearbox yourself in a better way, but you can't. You can't, because you can't touch nothing, you know. You're not allowed to open the engine and, okay, the engine is not properly made to take out the gearbox. You know, you have to open it like in the middle, so it's impossible to do it. If you really would like to do it, you can't. It's impossible. Take out. And it's not allowed.
Right. But if you want to cheat, it should be hard.
Yeah. they can see it because on the data side, they bring all your data. So.
Right, you said that you have to give, that's like part of the rules. You have to give your data over to them,
yes,
right?
Yeah. We talked yesterday about that. The organization made this rule. They want all your data about the engine. They don't care, and they keep it as your, let's say, secret, your setup for the chassis. So, but they want the engine data, because mainly they want to see that you are not cheating, and that you stay into the parameter that they ask you for the engine. That it means water temperature and over revving time. Over revving time, they ask you to stay under 1 second per lap.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's not that it's not possible to over rev more than 1 second, but you know, for the life of the engines, would be better to stay lower. So if sometime it happened, like sometime happened somewhere, I think Sachsen was one of those tracks. They are not shouting you because this happened, but it's kind of a gentleman agreement that you have to respect, you know. So, and also, you know, over revving all the time is not so good.
Of course. But are they making the engine better during the season? Like, are they going to give you a better engine next time they give you a good engine? Or
well,
you just have data to
I want to tell the truth about that. I mean, mainly the engine is the same since Jared's, but I can understand this, because if the engine is, it's the same and it's the same for everyone, it's not going to be an issue for no one, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same, yeah. And you keep it as an engine, and that's it.
No, I mean, Honda wants to make this, because they promised more than they gave.
Well, this
remember
is,
they
an,
promised,
yeah, okay,
you know.
That was a lot of, I think, publicity of the category,
right.
And whatever. They promised, I remember the early, they said 150 horsepower, and we were like, okay, let's do it. And they were always, you know, pretending to use this kind of engine for three races. So three races, usually in this kind of days, it means between 400 and 500 K per race. So let's go down.
Oh, look at that, it's coming down. It just started flying.
And you know, to pretend to do this kind of kilometers.
Right here.
Yeah. Maybe was a bit too much.
Yeah.
If we think to the super sports engines, that they have usually the Honda is around 140, a little bit more than 140. They stand 400 kilometers. So how can you do with the same engine a better performance at the triple of the kilometers? Okay, was a kind of fairy tale, but okay, now we have these engines, and I don't think the engine itself is a big issue. I mean, it's the same for everybody, so...
I know, but that's...
Pretend performance is maybe because we think to have a prototype bike, and we would like to be the guys from the super sport, you know?
Right.
Yeah, this
right.
is
right.
Maybe the proudness in itself of this kind of races, no?
Yep.
So we would like to do that, and they are proud to beat us because, you know, they
consider you guys a higher category.
Yeah. Oh, well, this
Maybe they not say, anymore.
Yeah. This they say. I'm not saying.
Well, the riders
on the higher category. We are on our category, and
we'll have different
things, and they have another, you know, kind of approach. But everyone has his home, and I think everyone can be proud to race in his category, and that's not the point. Anyway, and for the rest, I think that finally the show is here.
Yeah.
No, not compared to the Super Sport, but I mean, what the intention was on bringing this kind of bikes instead of the 250 that I still think is their racing bike, but as definition of the word, but finally the result is not bad, so why not?
The racing is good.
Yeah, the racing is good, and I think it's interesting. The guys are in a few cent between one and the other, so why we have to do not appreciate it? I mean, for me it's great. Finally, I was a bit wrong on it. I mean, I was maybe blaming a little bit too much on this thing in the beginning, but I recognize that now it's great, so why not?
Excellent.
I want to be honest.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks very much.
No problem. Ciao.
Okay, so there you go. A lot of good info from Andrea. Thank you very much, Andrea. We're going to see him at Indy. He's really looking forward to a little reunion with a lot of people that he hasn't seen in a while, like you and Liam and others. So that should be fun. Anyway, so let's see. So what were we talking about? We were talking about Saturday. Yeah.
It's through FP2, so walking into qualifying it was kind of interesting.
Well, from what I hear, qualifying was very, very, very cool.
It was very
from my point of view, it was all the action, quote-unquote action, happened off-screen. I was at the top of the hill, two corners from the front of the straight. So I didn't see what was going on, but I did notice that Lorenzo and Rossi were not coming around again. So I knew that something had happened.
You didn't hear an O from afar?
You know what the weirdest thing is, that there were places where you heard the announcers and he had jumbotrons, and other places where it was like just quiet, just bikes going by every once in a while.
You know what that's called? It's called a forest.
It's exactly it. Exactly it. Exactly.
There's sound balls all over the place. Actually, frankly, the last 15 minutes of qualifying were where things got really intense, and we certainly had the surprise and the anticipation going in like the last 3 minutes, and Nikki down, then Jorge down, then Valle down, and Ben vying for pole, which kind of blew everybody away.
I did notice that, because I had just walked past the jumbotron and I saw that he popped up on the top, and I was like, actually I rushed to a place where there's somebody had a huge American flag, because I was hoping I could get a shot of him going in front of the flag, which never actually happened. But
that was astounding, and Gianni pipping him at the last second too.
Right. So I didn't know about that until I got back to the media center. I didn't know that he got pipped. I was like, oh my god, it would be so cool if he was on pole.
Still, very impressive performance.
Very.
And, there's a lot of kind of whisper talk going on right now, especially with the combination of the engine situation and Rossi leaving. We'll talk about that a bit, because I do want to hear what the experience was from your side. I have a feeling, you can tell me now if I'm wrong, that since everybody, especially in the media center, already knew what was going to happen, although there were, I'm sure, people scrambling to try and get photos and interviews because that's what they do for a living, right? There was kind of a bit of resignation, like, oh, okay, we know what's going to happen. We got to cover this. And I would bet that the mood there, because at least everywhere else, Jules, everybody was like, you know, constantly hitting F5 on their browser or constantly trying to get news. And it's like, yeah, it's going to happen. Just it'll happen when it happens. And it was amazing, though.
What about the Rossi announcement?
Yeah, people clamoring for information. Oh, yeah. Something that is basically completely done.
Yeah, yeah. We were hoping that there was going to be a in-person announcement, but I guess it was all press releases that day.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he did do a bit of a talk later, but anyway, back to so you ran through FPT. What did you do on Saturday night?
Saturday night we went to again with Pole Position because that's Gordon is the one I got the hotel through and all the other stuff. So, and so we went to the Riders for Health auction where Julian Ryder and Neil Spaulding and let's see, we had Thomas Luthy there and some. Unfortunately, I'm now blanking on the Czech rider that they were sponsoring from 125s.
Shouldn't have done that to me.
Yep, sorry. Anyway.
Blanking and then Czech rider. I'm like, all right, everybody, you write in and remind us. We'll figure it out right away. Right.
So we but I was – both B and I were completely toast. So we just hung around for a little while, met up with some very interesting people who were – man, there's some weird person. You know, that's the other thing about European rounds is because Europe is really pretty small and it's easy to travel around. So you have all sorts of different kinds of fans going to these races. I have people who don't even like motorcycles. I mean, I'm serious. I was sitting next to a couple who they don't really care about motorcycles. They just like watching GPs. You know, they go to Formula One, they go to MotoGP, they go to rally. I mean, and they're like, you know, they look like they're like upper crust, you know, UK, typical what you expect from like a UK to upper crust person, you know.
They like spectacle, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty wild. So we did that, but we took off pretty early because we were beat. We hardly slept the night before. So, I definitely wanted to be sharp the next day. And then, you know, the next day we went for warm up and the other thing that's interesting at the track is they did the announcing over the PA in three languages.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, they did it in Czech, in German, and in English.
That's cool.
Yeah, so they were constantly switching. The Czech obviously got the most airtime, but they did throw in German and an English translation, which I thought was interesting. Yeah, and so then we had the racing. The coolest thing that really happened, one of the coolest things of the whole weekend was that Toby Moody invited me to go to the Eurosport announcing booth for the 125 race for the gridding and the start of it. And then I took off because I wanted to try to meet up with a MotoGP OD listener, Alan Fleming, and unfortunately we could never find each other. But
should have head back to the booth.
yeah. Well, it was a closet, and I think I was once Neil Spaulding arrived. I think it was just too tight in there.
Yeah.
But it was both hilarious and just mind blowing how well these guys work. And I have some audio that we'll play in a moment, just to give you an idea. But hand signals.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable how well these guys work together with hand signals. I also have some video which I'll have to save for a later show because I'm not going to be able to edit it for this one. So I was there when they were gridding up and when the race started and they're watching their little screen, the same feed that you guys watch, and a little timing screen that you guys could also have because Dorna makes that available, basically, from that vantage point, you could just basically see a straight in the last two corners of the racetrack, and that's it. So they were definitely checking the skies because during the 125 race we had some serious scary looking weather coming through.
Sure.
And that was a very interesting race too because like Nick Terrell was like on some super tires or something. I mean, it was unbelievable, like how much he dominated that race.
Yeah, I mean, it was gone from the word go. Like, okay,
it's one of those things where like at what point you have to do a double take and go, is he really 9 seconds ahead of everybody? It's only been like 4 laps.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Wow. Yeah, it really was a battle for everybody else, and it was, you know, you're right. I think the term super tire is awesome. it's clearly they are all running on pretty much the same rubber, but I think a lot of that is just down to will and what pace you're willing to run in those conditions, and also what your setup is. Because if you think about it, they really didn't know until the last minute, and the 125s only have one bike, so you have to be prepared to have that set up for the conditions at the start of the race. And they hit it, you know. Aspar no slouches, man. They do that all the time. It's amazing how they can pull off running in three different classes right now. But well done. Very well.
And that was actually a lot of the stuff that Toby and Julian and Neil were talking about during the race. And why don't we play the clip, which is actually mostly from before the race, when they're getting ready to start the broadcast. We'll play it now, and then we'll come back.
Cool, fired up.
All right.
So we're in the commentary booth of Eurosport, or commentary closet, with Toby Moody right now. Julian Rutter is going to get here, and I guess you guys will fit Neil in here as well, man.
Yeah, I tend to stand up and push the chair under the table.
Well, I know
the most important bit is the aircon at the moment, Jules, because
you want to close the door.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Turn the light on, man. It's so dark in here now. But it's a bit muggy, as you know, here this weekend. We're wet track at the moment. 125 grid being laid out. Security staff coming onto the grid. Oh, and the leggy ladies. And talking about leggy ladies, here's Julian just arriving. Julian's just arriving.
Yes, I am just arriving. Here I am.
And I point out the fact that he's being recorded.
So I will watch what I say.
Well, I was just talking about the leggy ladies.
That girl in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Jules, where's your camera?
World record in side leg measure.
Holy moly, that's abnormal.
It's not right, is it?
But the good thing is, although they've walked to the front of the grid, they're now going to be walking back. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So she'll be positioned in front of our contact.
No, she'll be third row. 1, 2, 3. Left a bit.
4, 5, 6. This is what we do.
They
we are
walking around. So
they're starting from the back. Leg.
Exactly.
Okay. Well,
it's a U-turn, mate.
She's equally as close. Her hips are about at my shoulders.
But she hasn't got an arse.
But she hasn't got an arse. And she's got no body.
It'll be arriving later. Her arse. It's in a taxi coming up from Bruno.
Am I going to have to edit this?
Doubtless.
Only recording the facts.
I got some tape.
No, the boys right next door have got
right.
Live, obviously, in here, but you're delayed with...
It's recorded as live.
Right.
And then played out. Now.
And you guys do this still the same thing for the races, or are you now live?
We're live for 125 and Moto2.
Oh, okay.
And we are on a 1 hour delay for Magic Grand Prix.
Is that going to be the case for the rest of the season?
Yes, that is the standard.
We did it all last year.
Yeah, I remember you guys did it last year, but now you're actually at the rounds, so...
We did half a dozen rounds last year. We're doing all of Europe plus Qatar this year.
Yeah. Also, you're not going to Phillip Island, right?
No, the cost of the flyaway races is... The cost of getting there is a lot.
Well, I know, I have to come here.
You have to come here. You know this big bit of water in the middle is a bit of a pain.
Yeah.
Having said that, I'm not doing Indianapolis because I'm going to Indianapolis to do the circuit announcing, pit lane announcing,
right,
as I did last year.
That's good.
Which is, I look forward to that, actually. So as long as the British airport strike doesn't kick in and it doesn't label us to get out.
All right, well, what do you guys think is going to happen in the race today?
Haven't got a clue. With a wet track as we've got now, a little bit of wind, it's fog... Foggy, it's damp, it's a bit miserable, it's very, very muggy. You know? Mark Marquez could win it, Mark Marquez could get torpedoed out of the race at turn 4, lap 6 by some no-hoper Jean-Pierre Nobody, and he's in the ground.
I'm trying very hard to remember in 125s who's the wet weather for, man. And I don't really know.
But wait, we had a wet race that dried up, but that was, I think, just because the guys were on wet.
I would not be surprised if somebody like Jakob Kornfeld,
Donington,
who knows this place as well as anybody, I would think that Tommy Koyama would be a a very nice each-way bet. Hold on, caller. Let's have a look at Donington last year, which would tell you... Now, was that a full wet race?
I believe so.
I think it
dried and dried and dried
the day of the day. Yeah. No. 125
was after MotoGP.
Ah, it was...
Oh! Do I get 10 points for that?
It wasn't 125, 250 MotoGP. Let me get my last year sheet out.
Well, who won in Malaysia? Julian Simon. Gone.
Yeah, well, this is the other problem. Half the field was in Moto2.
Oh, great. We just don't know. That's
we like that.
Bit of entertainment.
Yep. And the 125 field has changed so much this year.
How do you guys get prepared to, like, you got to figure out all the riders, meet all the riders, learn about them? How do you learn about them?
Hanging around for years.
But a lot of these guys are so new. I mean, they're kids. They have been around for years.
But you've seen guys in British Championship, you've seen guys in Europeans, you've seen them as wild cards, you read the foreign magazines, so hopefully the names won't be a surprise. Cool. But
now they're driven, they've let Chemlik in.
But not to Shkova, yes? That was what I saw after warm-up.
Okay. Well, technically, Chemlik and Tushkova didn't qualify in 125 because they were outside 107%, but Chemlik was outside 107% by 1.7 seconds. Give him a pass.
Let him in.
But Andrea, the girl, was only another 3/10 of 4/10 of a second.
So why let one and not the other?
But
1.7 is a lot.
That's 1.7 outside of the 107?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot. And Moto2?
Moto2, Carol Abraham will not be starting. He gave himself a whack yesterday with his two crashes within six laps.
What's the bang on the head before or after the second crash?
I'm sure the wallet will...
Thanks very much.
Right, so as you can see, they are pros. So and of course the results were Tyrrell complete runaway.
20 seconds back, too.
Yeah, 20 seconds back, and that's actually after he kind of just let off, finally.
Yep.
Because he could have probably won by 30. There was an incredibly close battle with Espargaró and Rabat.
Yep.
Every time they came by, it was like, well, who's going to be first? Who's going to be first? And then back to Folger in fourth. And Jakob Kornfeld, who's local boy, just got pipped. I don't actually remember was he ahead of Folger going into the.
I think there was a slight coming together, not anything major, just like a slight bump offline. The folks don't hold me to that, but that's what I seem to remember. I've only watched the 125s once, and I watched it on Sunday morning. So, I believe there was a very, very mild incident.
That's what I remember. I mean, I was basically at that point. I was making my way to visit my wife, who's in. Here's another very confusing thing about Brno, is they name all their grandstands T and a number because it's Tribune or Tribuna, like Tribune, and we're used to that being a turn. So I was like, oh, T1, okay, that must be at the end of the straight. But I'm like, wait, there's no grandstand at the end of the straight. What's going on? So then I looked at the map and I was like, oh yeah, okay, so it's actually at the Omega corner or whatever that thing is. So I made my way over there. We watched the end of the race there. She had a big jumbotron that she was able to look. And then Bradley Smith, unfortunately, six. He was on pole, it's an unfortunate trend for him. He just, I don't know what it is. He fades or blah, I don't know. He's got one podium this year, I think, right?
Yeah, and the other Brit in the race, Danny Webb, didn't even get around.
Yeah, he crashed in the first lap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was still in the booth with those guys when that happened.
Yeah, Marquez broke his string. All the way down in seventh.
Mm-hmm. But he was iffy to race. So the fact that he was even out there was good because he had a massive crash on Friday, I believe.
He did indeed. And in fact, there was a fair amount of speculation and press reports coming out that had me kind of worried for that. But, you know, it's funny. A lot of people think Marquez is this tiny little kid. He's bigger than Danny by a fair amount.
Yeah, because, he was a tiny little kid.
Yeah, he was a tiny little kid.
But he's like 15, so he's growing.
But he still fits perfectly on that bike. I'm quite impressed with that. And, you know, the fact that they actually switched from the KTM to the Derby in 1 year and continued on winning, or actually, increased their winning. 2012 is going to be weird, dude. All these changes coming around. You know there's going to be so many rule changes between now and then. Anyway, Marquez in seventh. Uema, really nice run from him. In eighth, in ninth, Koyama, and in tenth, Lewis Salom. Very cool. Schroeder was running a really good race for a while. He ended up down in 13th, but there was some fun through the pack.
And there's also Efren Vasquez, who almost, who was doing very well and then crashed out two laps from the end.
Yeah. Big fun. 125s, you're guaranteed to have a thrill. And same with the next class we're going to talk about, which ran at the dry, I think.
Yes, it was completely dry. I will tell you right now, I have no freaking clue what the hell was going on the track. It was like, because this was a race that I wanted to photograph, so I was out actually, I said bye to B, and I went out there on the track, and Iannone was leading, and I was like, oh well, that's a given. Actually, it started with Tamizawa leading, and then Iannone was leading, and I was like, okay, well that's a given. He's either gonna have a drive-through penalty, or he's gonna be win a race, and then all of a sudden, he's not.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's good reason that some of the other snappers actually try and make sure that they can at least temporarily have access to a big screen, at least from a distance. You know what we should do?
Well, I usually try to do that because I actually take photographs of the screen just so that time wise I know exactly at what point like a lead change happened or whatever.
Yeah.
What was really crazy was that I was on the, I consider this the other straight, which is the straight heading downhill. I was on that straight when Robbie Rolfo blew up or whatever the hell happened to him, because he was running second,
mm-hmm.
Behind Iannone, and like I was taking photos of him, and all of a sudden I see Tony Ellis just blow by him, and I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, actually, Rolfo was led, not necessarily at the line, but led a fair amount of the time. And as much as I kind of like to chuckle against some of or I don't know what I'm saying, those that absolutely adore Robbie, I was well and duly impressed. So that was a great run for him, and it's too bad that it was machinery that ended up putting him out of that battle. And, we haven't seen a whole lot of those spec engines go pop this year. So does it indicate anything? I don't think so. But just really unfortunate timing. The one thing it could have been is he could have been, wringing that thing's neck for all it's worth and over-revving it both on up and down shifts. And
as we just heard from Andrea, which you haven't heard, but they are not allowed to over-rev the engine for more than a second per lap.
Yeah, but you can do it on downshifts. Even with a slipper.
Oh, you're saying accidentally over rev it. Yeah, of course.
Well, no, not even necessarily accidentally. I mean, you're trying to bang through the gears so fast because each lap, when you're running at that top pace, you're running faster than you ever have before, and you're just trying to figure out where to bang your downshifts in. And you're lucky if you can get a rev match. You usually won't. Yeah. Trust me, they're doing about 10% over whatever red line is, the prescribed red line based on the ECU. On the downshifts, even with a slipper.
That's very cool. I haven't thought about that, but yeah, that must be it. That must be it. Anyway, it was just really a bummer seeing him go out because.
Yep.
I've been watching this guy
forever.
I mean, he's been pretty much in every class. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Of course, the huge news there was that Carl Abraham was not even present.
True.
He had a horrible weekend,
which is
so ironic because they were announcing, his MotoGP team, and
it's his dad's track.
It's his dad's track, So very, very unfortunate for him. And the other two Czechs, Lukas Pesek and Patrick Vostadek, both crashed out, I believe.
Still plenty to cheer for then with that many bikes. I mean, you know, had 33 bikes finish the race, which is astounding if you think about it. You know, take two full MotoGP grids, yeah, and you're not going to end up with that finishing a race. Even with, you know, actually, I think that may have, I'd have to look it up, but that may have been the most riders that finished a Moto2 race this year.
I usually look at the number of crashes, and this is a very short list.
It is, indeed.
Relatively speaking.
That's a good thing. It may owe part of that to the nature of the track. I mean, turn one does have its dangers, but they, for the most part, manage to make it through there clean. And once they start to space out, things actually end up pretty mellow. It's usually the first one or two laps, or the first corner, frankly, that catches these guys out. So,
totally.
Yeah. And frankly, you have to think about it. If you can't make it through the first corner of a race, and that's happening to you consistently, you might want to change your approach to that corner. One way.
Are you speaking to Alex DeBone by any chance?
Did I say that? Perhaps he's one that might want to rethink his early race strategy. That was a fun race all around.
I was very surprised that Yuki actually was in second because it was hard to tell. After a while, like, who the hell was leading, who was in second? I was really confused. I was very, very confused. They started catching up with some back markers, believe it or not. It was on that track to catch a back marker is just ridiculous.
Absolutely, yep.
So, yeah, but Tony took the win. Takahashi was second, Iannone third. I think he was very pissed about the third because he looked good to win. Mm-hmm. And then Jules Cluzel, Julian Simon, Tomasi, Alex DeBone, Simone Corsi, who we haven't seen do well for a while, Stefan Bradl, and Soya Tabizawa, who was also looking very good. And I was, you know, he was on pole, and I was really looking forward to seeing him on the podium. I just really like this guy. He was in the post-QP conference and just struck me as a super, super, super nice guy. It's really funny. I have a very funny photo of him playing with his little Tissot watch, like, because they all got him from Kevin Schwantz, like, gave the pole sitters the watches, and they sat down. They're all talking, you know, they're talking to the press is talking to Lorenzo.
They're all playing with their watch. That's funny.
I mean, Pedrosa, yeah, and Tomizawa is sitting there playing with his watch. It's great. Anyway, so that was the Moto2 race. And then we went to the main event, which was, yeah, it was in the dry, and it was, yeah, very, very well put. Actually, I was just looking at your notes. Dry in more ways than one.
Well, the first five laps were great, and we've had plenty of great five-lap races, both this year and last.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it was actually a great battle for fourth also. Mm-hmm. Yep. You put down in the notes, was it windy? Yes, it was really, really windy. And after the race, I believe it was Michael Scott pointed out to Jorge and Danny and Casey that this year's race was 19 seconds longer. It took 19 seconds longer than last year's. And can they explain what happened? And they were all like, "Oh, yeah, that's a good point." And they all kind of said, "You know, it must have been the wind." It must have been the wind, basically.
There's a lot of factors that go into that. You know,
The temperatures were. Well, that's the thing is that the other atmospheric conditions were actually pretty similar.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you've got so much stuff, Jules. You've got.
Oh, I realize that, but normally we do get them going faster every year, or at least close to.
Let me plant a seed in your mind. The 800s are definitely going away. Teams want to win, but those that know that they're not going to be able to score as high as they might be able to might not be putting all their money into R&D right now, because what they're doing is actually spending a shed load back at the factory doing R&D on their bikes to come.
I will believe that for Suzuki. I will believe that for the satellite teams. I do not believe that for Honda, Yamaha, or Ducati. Those guys, Honda is I think Honda is putting a lot of development into this bike still.
Well, they've got a whole bunch on the line right now, and frankly, with all the shuffleboarding that's going on for next year, you know that they desperately want an 800 title.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this was their series, kind of, you know.
Yep.
So they to finish. You're absolutely right. But if they don't win the title in 2011, they're gonna go for the entire era without a win, without a championship.
And you know that's just
It's not acceptable.
Literally, yeah. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Let me talk about the people that went out. We'll just kind of chat about the race a little bit.
Sure.
The first three out, and I'm going to leave the last person out for chatting a bit later. First person out was Caparossi.
I didn't see what happened, but I guess were he and Davizioso actually, were they involved together?
No. There was a 5-lap split there, but I believe.
Well, I know, because Davizioso came back on the track.
I would have to say that I believe that he was close to him. I don't remember the exact circumstances. It wasn't a major crash. In fact, it was great. There weren't, considering what we've had to deal with in the past few races, there were no major crashes this weekend, with the exception perhaps Marquez.
Bautista, yeah. Actually.
True. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I completely forgot about that. I'm not even sure how that guy could ride, let alone walk. Trips back and forth to the hospital. Are you good to go? I know my name and I know what day it is. Okay, go right. So I believe it was Cappy and Debbie getting together. Debbie was second out. Poor hapless Mika Kallio, and who knows where he's going to end up next year. I think he'd make a great Moto2 rider.
Yes, he would. I think he would.
Yeah. And they're going to leave. Well, we already kind of mentioned it. So two turns from the end. There's a lot of people giving him a lot of flack, and frankly, I like the spirit that he showed this last weekend.
Go back to FP2, because he crashed in FP2 very, very hard.
Yes, he did. And everybody thought at that point that he was done.
Yeah, because he dislocated a shoulder.
Yep.
And his other shoulder's messed up from a previous crash. And
there was worry about a vertebra.
That's right. Yeah.
And there was wait a minute, he crashed in warm up too. Now, did he crash in warm up? I don't know.
No, I don't think so, because he's been crashing in front of me every single time. So, and he didn't crash in front of me in front of warm up. So,
I heard somebody dub him today the 2010 version of RDP in 2008. I'm like, yeah, but I still have to salute him for the fight and the drive that he put on.
Having a great race. It was it was amazing. I kept seeing him, and I was like, well, Caparossi's out. I see a blue bike coming up the hill, way ahead of the a Grissini and both the Pramax.
Well, we had a 250cc reunion of a bunch of guys that pretty much hate each other.
Very true.
And that was just awesome. That was probably the funnest part of the GP, because I'm like, yeah, I know these guys are gritting their teeth, and it was clear that. Simoncelli's tires were just shit in the bed at the end of the race, but he was overriding the bike, because he's like, I don't care if you pass me, I'm gonna do a classic Marco, and he's gonna make some balls out knuckleheaded pass, and if he can make it stick, great. If not, but I think there's a little bit of him right now. It's like, don't destroy the equipment in the heat of battle. I think he's actually got a little bit of his red mist under control. Anyway.
Yeah.
Should it run through the top 10?
Oh, well, Bautista did crash at the very end.
Yep.
Two corners from the end. And then once again, I was there, and the way he walked away from the bike was just really depressing to see. You know, like, you could just tell he was so painfully disappointed. I mean, I guess
disconsolate is the word you're looking for.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, and
because he really was doing well. I mean, he probably would have finished ninth, I think.
And you would have expected, or you wouldn't have been surprised if we had seen a cold press release from Rizzo Sugi, but not even close. Full of praise. you know, fought like a warrior, brilliantly done, and he did, at least in my opinion. And so, like I said, well done. Great to see you three battling down there, and very, very fun. Top 10 now? Or just run through the whole list?
Go ahead. I mean, there's not much more than top 10.
Very true. Yeah, because the gaps here, you know, we had 51 seconds covering the top 13, and a couple of people, notably Batista and Callio, left some points on the table. Your top five is Lorenzo Pedrosa, Stoner, Ben Spies, who was running with the leaders for about that first five laps and then slowly split off. Who haven't we mentioned so far? Valentino Rossi, not the best weekend. Setup, tires, health? I'm going to say health. I'm going to pick that out there and look forward to him.
No, well, he says setup, but yeah, it's probably a combination. And sure. He was in such a bad mood this weekend. Yeah.
Oh, he was pissed off, I think.
He was really pissed off because it's the first time where he just did not linger at all, like in the paddock. He just would go from the motorhome straight into the garage, and he was in the garage a long time.
Well, the crash that he had in QP, I mean, I can't say how many laps I've seen of him, and we don't of late often get to see him tossing the bike away, but he was stamping and kicking and throwing his arms around. It was clear that he was mad, and I was thinking to myself, I don't want to be Alex Briggs when he gets back in here.
Wow.
So yeah, that's Rossi in fifth. Your sixth through tenth was Edwards, Melandri, Barbera. Well done for him.
Well, you missed Nicky.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Nicky in sixth. Sorry, Nick. There goes another chance for any interview. Colin Edwards, Marco Melandri, who I'm working on for Indy, Hector Barbera, and Randy DePunier.
Who, in a way, is actually quite a hero because he kind of out-Rossied Rossi. I mean, granted, you know, his injury was not nearly as bad because there was no penetration. But less than a month. It's been less than a month.
Yep.
So that was insane.
In 11th place, Marco Simoncelli, who battled quite well, and that was it would have been him and Batista to the wire. Aleix Espargaró, and in the last finishing spot, at least he's Mr. Consistent in that spot, would be Alex De Angelis running for Interwitten. Was riding for Interwitten. Hiroshi did run the test, and we'll probably run that interview in a bit.
Yep.
But I think Alex is heading back. You know, I was wondering, Jules, if his team, if they've really held the spot for him, if he's got somewhere to go back to in Moto2.
Ooh. I have no idea, but that's a very good question. I don't know.
I think we'll find out in about 5 days.
Yeah. Hiroshi talks about this, but the spoiler of that interview is just that he's not sure if he's going to be at Indy yet. They're still basically one more doctor needs to take a look. I think by the end of the weekend is when he's going to make the decision to go or not.
Okay. Well, I hope he comes, and yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't come just to.
Oh, he'll be there. He'll be there. I'm sure he'll be there in person, but I'm not sure. He's not 100% sure if he's going to ride.
And so you talked to him after he did his 10 laps on Monday, and why don't we roll that? I'm curious.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Hero, how are you doing?
Okay, now I come back from a long break because I crashed in Silverstone, and 2 months I was out. And it was very frustration days. It was hard days because I have to lay down, I have to stay in bed for 1 month, and then I watch the MotoGP from TV every week. So
like me.
So now I'm happy because my back, my vertebra is recovering good, and last Wednesday doctor check, mm-hmm. and they take X-ray and looks good, so he said I can try today.
Good.
And yes. Now I just tried right now, and I did just 10 laps, but seems for 10 laps it's okay. So now next step for us is making 12 laps, 14 laps, so try to increase the lap time and many laps. So I hope if I feel good enough, I will come back for Indy. So
oh, you are?
Yeah, but depend, eh?
Okay.
Depend. So
I'm gonna
decide after the this test.
Okay.
So, but for the moment, I had a long break, so I have to go step by step, and then let's see how much I can how much I can recover on the bike.
Yeah. And how is the bike doing for you today? How do you feel on it?
This moment, it's okay. For first impression, was quite good. After 2 months, I was I didn't ride any bike, so this is first riding after the crash. So for that, I think the feeling of bike was quite good.
Is anything changed? Like, do you feel like that something is improved?
Yes, that they changed chassis, they changed a little bit electronic control, so seems engine is more smooth, more mild.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, then easier to ride. So this helps me a little bit more to come back, to makes me easier to come back. Basically, engine same but different control, and then the engine character changed.
So I see.
I have to adapt for that, but I think to get back the feeling, it's not too bad. It's better than too aggression.
Yeah. All right. So there's a chance it'll be at Indy, and if not, Misano for sure, right?
Yeah. If I cannot come back to Indy, I'm gonna come back to Indy.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, so that was the races, the other thing that was interesting during the test was that Honda rolled out their 2011 bike and kind of uncovered it. We started taking photos of it, and then I got kicked out. But I wasn't the only one. I mean, they kicked out about three other photographers.
I'm pretty sure you wanted to wander up there and very gently caress and fondle that exhaust that they have for the 2011 bike.
It is pretty damn sexy. definitely.
You got it. That one shot, that's a keeper. You have to give that to me. That might go on a wall, please.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So all in all, a weekend that was full of surprises, full of some things that will actually change the rest of the season. Full of course, the announcement.
Yeah, the divorce.
Yeah, you'll notice we haven't really gone into it in a big way. I guess the one thing that would, at least for me, be interesting to talk about, besides the fact that now we get to start watching most of the other dominoes fall, and we got a whole lot of information about that that I'm sure all you guys know. And if you wanted us to talk about it and we didn't, please write in. We'll make sure that we do next time. How's that, Jules?
That's good. And actually, we do talk a little bit about it with David.
True.
If you want, I can roll that right now. And
Let's do that. I wish I'd listened to this one beforehand.
Yeah, okay. There's nothing surprising in there. This is David Emmett, myself, and B driving to Brno Circuit and on the test day on Monday.
Hello, this is Jules and B and David Emmett from Motor Matters. We're driving on to we're about to drive right and then turn left, apparently. We're going to the Autodrome at Brno and for the test. And we are going to talk about the love letters in Brno.
Yeah, that was... That was interesting. Sunday was really quite frustrating because everyone knew what was coming.
Right.
There was no secret, but everyone has known what's been coming for probably the past 2 months. So it was just sitting around waiting for it to happen.
Thanks to the exclusive story from Motorcycle News, of course.
Well, of course, absolutely. I first heard about it in Mugello from Paolo Scalera, who writes for GP1.
Oh, yeah.
He talked about the offer that that Rossi had from Ducati, and also about the offer that he'd had from Yamaha, and that was basically the reason that he was leaving and going to Ducati. So it was it was strange. And then we get three separate press releases. We get the Yamaha announcement. We get Rossi's love letter, and then we get
a very short Ducati one.
Yeah.
Well,
the most important sentence in the Yamaha press release was the one which said that Valentino Rossi is a Yamaha rider and until the end of the year, I think, was the year.
Oh, they did say until the end of the year.
Yeah.
So, does he get to test today?
That's the... he's testing today. He's testing today, but what they're testing today is they had a problem yesterday. He talked about they hadn't changed the setup at all. They were using the same tyre, but the bike felt completely different. It didn't have any grip at all. He said it felt like he was on wet tyres.
Interesting, because that's what Casey was talking about as well.
Exactly, Dovizioso said exactly the same. All the tyres just didn't seem to work for some reason. But so they're going to try. They're going to run around on the tyres again today with exactly the same setup and try to figure out what was going wrong.
So basically, he's just riding his regular bike.
Yeah, but I think he might be testing the 2011 bike as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or some of the parts anyway.
Does everybody just assume that Yamaha would just say
you're not having any more of it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're going to the competition and stuff.
Yeah, true, but his feedback is still valuable, and he is still a Yamaha employee.
Right.
So,
and he's probably not going to take secrets away. He's just going to take his knowledge that he already has, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's not going to... anything that he learns about the 2011 bike is not going to make that much difference. In the Ducati press conference at both Del Torchio, the CEO of Ducati and Goreski, team manager, said that they'll basically be using, they're more or less done with the 2011 bike. They will only be testing, they will be developing, they'll be using Rossi to develop the 2012 bike.
Oh my god.
So,
but you know, they've always been early. They've been like the first guys to have the next year's prototype going on the track. Remember the 800 was
Bruno
running around at Bruno
in
2006, right?
Yeah, that's right, and scaring everyone because it was almost as fast as the 900.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, eventually it was faster.
Yeah.
Lap timing wise, anyway.
Yeah.
This is an interesting way in.
This is what you get when you follow GPS instructions. Get all sorts of interesting little roads.
We drove through the forest yesterday.
Oh yeah!
It's just so cool. This coming into Brno is just such an interesting experience. So different. Like Laguna is also very far from any major roads or buildings or anything like that. But it's typical California kind of backcountry. This is a real honest, proper European forest. You know, and like there was actually a point where I was walking around the track where I walked through, I was trying to get to the main gate, and I was literally walking down this little path through the forest, you know, expecting a little Red Riding Hood or something, except a bunch of people in yellow shirts. They really have a huge contingent of Rossi fans here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is one of the most interesting things at one point Valentino Rossi is going to retire. That point is probably 2 or 3 years in the future. But the colour of MotoGP is going to change. You know, I mean, the amount of yellow you see in the stands will reduce.
Before then.
No. But once he goes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Once he goes. So the colour of
they're going to retire that colour. I heard actually.
It'll be illegal to use the color yellow on your bike. Yeah. No, it's
also this must be like one of the campground areas.
Yeah, there's campgrounds all over the place.
Yeah. I know, and people just kind of walked out of the forest. That's the other thing. It's like people walking out of the forest, with their tickets, and
exactly. Umbrellas and everything. That's great.
Dennis Lewis was telling a story about Hockenheim, because Hockenheim used to be the same. There's a great big forest there, and there was police never used to go into the forest because it was just too scary. There was basically they'd go in. The Hell's Angels owned it, owned the forest.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah. So lovely. They would go in, after the weekend. The police would go in and take the bodies out.
Jesus.
And when Bernie Ecclestone took over MotoGP back in the early 90s, I think, one of the first things he did was send security in and clear out the forest.
Like a Robin Hood type of situation.
Yeah, like a Robin Hood sort of thing. Yeah, exactly.
Except that the Hells Angels really didn't rob the poor.
No.
They just robbed everything.
No, that's right.
Beat the shit out of people.
A good deal less discriminating. Can you get there is a green...
Yes. Hang that up. We are approaching the entrance.
That's right.
So let's see. So we're going to hopefully see Hiroshi Aoyama, right? There still hasn't been any word whether he's actually going to ride or not.
He is. He's going to ride.
He is going to ride.
He is going to ride. I spoke to him on Friday or Saturday, I can't remember. But he said he was feeling pretty good. It's just that he doesn't have the strength in that mid part of his body because he's had to rest it. So he's not sure how strong he's going to be.
Ah.
He's just going to ride to test his fitness. He probably won't be racing at Indy, but he might be. He might start racing again at Misano. He wants to get a couple of races in before he goes back to Japan because he wants to
do well there.
Do well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The Angelus is so slow on that bike. Is that because he's just really making sure that he doesn't hurt anything, like he doesn't use up an engine, but, crash and cause those guys extra pain?
Also,
he was fast last year.
I know, but I think he had a lot more testing last year.
Oh,
he had a lot
true.
More, he had a lot more time on the bike.
True, true.
He's been riding a completely different, an utterly different bike all year.
Yeah. So before we sign off, B, what did you think of the weekend?
I was asleep.
She was asleep. Great. See, I mean, what do you think of Brno?
Oh, Brno is a great track.
Yeah, it's a cool track.
Yeah.
This was kind of a sleeper MotoGP race. Thanks, David, and thanks, B.
Okay, so that's the material that we have. Although I'm going to squeeze some other ambient noises in here. I mean, I think so much has been said about the Rossi Ducati thing that do we really need to talk about it? Probably not. I mean, everybody's read the handwritten note that he wrote. I mean, I think only Rossi could get away with something so crazy.
Actually, the cool thing about that, and I will definitely give Lynn Jarvis and everybody, they insisted on getting that note, they were like, please let us have it. Valentino, on the other hand, insisted that they leave everything in, not type it up, not transcript it, nothing like that. Print the note only in high resolution with the things that were crossed out. It's a bit theatrical on his part, but I think it's just kind of showing a little bit of genuineness, or perhaps even better, show business acumen that we all know that he has. I think the big story to come out of that, Jules, is that it's not necessarily, I want to say that this may or may not be an amicable split, especially as we get towards the end of the season. And, over the last few years, teams that have been losing riders have been, and it wasn't always this way, but have been really relatively cool about letting their rider, who's already signed for another team, go ahead and run the test. And especially with the minuscule amount that we've got right now, that's actually really important.
It is.
And it looks like with the departure of Furusawa and some of the changes that are going on there, they've at least initially indicated, this being Yamaha, that they may not release him for Valencia. And that would be a shame. I think part of it is also posturing. They know how to posture too, and you know, saving face. We'll have to see. But that was the early indication, and nobody seemed to be happy about it. And that might create some very bizarre tension between now and the end of the year in the already full of tension Yamaha garage.
It's very true. Although I have to say that on test day, those guys looked so relaxed. They looked so relieved that the news was finally out. Davide Brivio was walking around smiling. Lynn Jarvis was walking around smiling. They just looked like a huge weight has been lifted. And it's totally understandable. I mean, these guys, I mean, we've known about it for freaking ever. So those guys must have known it for, you know, a lot longer.
Well,
Rossi
actually said that he started playing this literally at the beginning of this year, in January.
Right.
And started seriously talking with Ducati, I believe it was in mid-March. So that's an, you know, and maybe he's just being honest, and that's what everybody does, and it probably is. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of refreshing to hear that, you know, these guys are looking, they're looking way forward.
Yeah. No, and well, that kind of thing has to take. I mean, they're not going to do this anything like that on a whim.
Mm-hmm. Word is too that he basically signed for about the same amount of lease as far as salary goes that he was making at Yamaha.
That he was, not that he was about to.
Yeah, exactly.
Big difference. What was I going to say about the other thing is that you know, it was also funny because the moment that those press releases were moved, the journalists immediately switched the story to, like, what about Jeremy Burgess? What about the team? You know, and so the next day, those guys were being hounded now.
Yeah.
For where are you going to be? And I even joked because I ran into Alex Briggs and I was like, you know, I just wanted to tell him thanks for all the work that he does on Twitter, because he really is a fascinating guy to follow.
Yep.
On Twitter. If you guys don't follow him, definitely follow this guy because he's so honest and he basically gives out as much information as he possibly can.
You know what we're going to do? We're gonna put his URL as well in the show notes. And
Sounds good. Yeah.
You got some more followers coming.
Yeah. And I just joked to him because he was talking to some Ducati guy. And I was like, oh, you're talking to your future teammate. He was just like, oh, God, not again.
Well, the basic word is, and I think we've had it from a multiple amount of sources, is that at least as far as Jerry goes, and Valley's also said the same thing, is that Jerry will make up his own mind. He's probably going to make it later rather than soon. But he also has not a whim, if you will, but he's been in the game for a long time, and I think he wouldn't mind resting a bit, maybe going back to the homeland and doing some tutoring or working with an up-and-coming rider. You know, once you've worked with Rossi for that long, dude, I mean, without being all Muppetish, how are you going to, you know, top that? How many world championships has your rider had?
I don't know.
Last count, 11?
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jerry Burgess is a very valuable target for a lot of these guys, too, so.
But, you know, the thing that also is bugging the crap out of me. There's a lot of people that are going, oh, well, you know, can Rossi win without Burgess? And the first thing that pops in my head is, well, yeah, he had a couple of world championships before he even hooked up with him. Granted, they had great synergy and worked well together, but I don't know. It's just kind of odd. Are we over the Rossi news yet?
it seemed almost – it would have been – I think a little bit anticlimactic had it not been for the love note.
True.
You know, like, I think that's what really shows the Rossi, like, you know, persona perfectly, is that you knew that no matter what, because the buildup was so huge, all those photoshopped files of, you know, photoshopped images of him riding a Ducati and just the buildup over the last few weeks, and knowing that it was going to get announced in Brno, that everybody kind of expected it to be that's it? And yet he somehow managed to still top that by putting out that note, you know?
What did you think of the, in the race, one of the highlights, at least for me, or the most interesting parts, were the putting green. That was nice, wasn't it? That was deep, man. I was on the edge of my seat.
What are you talking about?
You gotta leave that in. did you miss Frey's post-race antics?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did not see them. I have not seen the race yet.
I will fill in both yourself. Jorge won, by the way. Jorge won. Finishes or gets 3/4 of the way around his lap. Dismounts his motorcycle. Starts walking through across a bunch of grass, et cetera, et cetera. He ends up on a green. Apparently, there's a golf course that is around Brno. Ends up with a putter. This is the seventh hole, by the way.
Okay, perfect.
Yes.
Seventh one.
Although the flag that was in the pin was not a Lorenzo Land flag, which kind of, I'm like, well, you missed the opportunity.
Yeah.
Totally. And so he put the ball down about a foot away from it, and I think it took him 3 putts to get it in. So, but yeah, that was all over TV, and that was the, you know, kind of the one of the more exciting moments of the. We were kind of waiting. It was really long and drawn out. Anyway.
You know, the interesting thing is that unless something happens, so the most successful season that Rossi ever had was 2002, I believe, when he finished. He had 11 wins. David Emmett and I were going through this.
I think you left some of the Encyclopedia Czechia in.
Yeah, well, it's jet lagged, exactly, but it was I think 11 wins, 3 seconds,
something
third, and one DNF, which is, remember the when I'm sorry. I'm confusing the two, because I originally thought it was 2005 that was his most successful, but it was actually 2002.
Yeah.
But he had one DNF, which was a mechanical, and you know, Lorenzo could very well top that if he stays on form. I mean, it's hard to imagine that he's not going to have one DNF. He's very dodgy about his engine situation. Extremely dodgy.
I think everybody was doing that.
I know, but he was being asked some questions that he didn't really have to be so dodgy about, and he was. Anyway, what was I going to say about that? So he's probably not going to have a 1-2-1-2-1-2 the entire season, but he could very well beat the Rossi's best season, which was 2002, and Rossi also had a close to that season in 2005. Where it was all first and seconds, except for the crash with Melandri and Motegi.
Well, but you know, if you think about it, and I think this was pointed out elsewhere, and I'll parrot it, is that with the points lead he has right now, he could probably not too badly, especially considering that we've got a relatively depleted field, and if you finish, you're going to get points. That's pretty much how it's been this year. Mm-hmm. He could, if he had to, you know, start the last race from pit lane and still probably, you know, there are a couple of races from pit lane. And with the talent, you know, if they ran out of motors and they give him a fresh motor for the last race of the year, if you
need it. Oh, yeah. This is, I think, one of the kind of the ugly sides of the engine rule is that.
There's been a lot of ugly sides lately with people doing exactly what racers will do, but if you start putting more and more restrictions on people, they're going to get more and more creative. I mean, the Elias on Friday thing is a classic example.
Exactly. That's right.
And like you said, there were a lot of people in the paddock that were kind of pissed off about it, but what they should not be pissed off at is the team, or is the team that pulled that off, nor the rules makers, because the rule was out there, but they should be pissed off at themselves for not interpreting it quite as well as another team did. So,
well said.
Yep. All right, a little bit last, some last news in GP land. The three Americans are actually testing at Indy this weekend, which is kind of unusual, but I kind of wondered how Hayden got away with that. But these guys are all, two of them are replacement riders. We also do have Kenny Noyes that's going to get to run, and I think part of it's a PR gig, although they're getting a fair amount of track time. Kenny's not run there before, and he's probably, you know, on a good day with the Jack and Jones bike, he could be right up there in the front. It'll be interesting to see how well both Hayden and the Selvofer. Riders had a whole bunch of practice on that thing. Beautiful Moriwaki. Jason Salvo's on an FTR and has had little. See how that goes. Indy, and what's going on with MotoGPOD? Boy, that could be a show in itself, couldn't it, Jules?
It could. I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but I'll let you run with it.
Well, I'm not going to go too far because, frankly, we are meeting up with Dorna at Indy in a week from this Saturday, from this show. And I'm looking forward to it. And we're talking about future collaboration as well as our general presence in the paddock and pit area. But for this race, and thank you very much to Fabio and Marco and all the guys at Dorna for letting us come and cover the sport that we love so much and get it out to you guys, the MotoGPOD fans. We are having a meetup. Was that good? You like that, Jules?
Yeah, beautiful.
Oh, thank you. we are having, and people have been asking about a GPOD meetup on Saturday. This is going to be right after Moto 2 practice, I believe. There's a half hour gap between that and the 125s. Saturday, August 28th at 12:30 p.m., half past noon, behind the pagoda along the Yard of Bricks. And I did put up a little event schedule for this on Facebook, on the Facebook fan page. Talk a little bit about that more in a moment. But we've already got 35 people saying yes, another equivalent amount saying maybe. And so I think we're going to be, figure half will show up. It'll be about the size of.
Yeah.
But it's still early days and there's a week to go. I think it's going to be pretty big. So try and make sure you can get there. If not, I'll be at some bar Friday night at 9 o'clock for the WIRA meetup. So anyway.
And there's going to be we're definitely going to bring out some cool people from the paddock in there too.
Absolutely. So. And there are some that are already lined up that I haven't even told you about yet.
Sweet.
This is funny. We don't even tell each other. Hey, welcome home. this week, we've had fantastic growth, amazing growth on the Facebook fan page. And I want to thank everybody, especially those of you that are new to the show, for joining us. And if this show wasn't jam-packed enough for you, feel free to go back through the prior 240 episodes and find one you like. And I guarantee you, if you're looking for a rider that you're a fan of, odds are we'll have them. If we don't yet have them, send us an email on the contact page and say, Jim, Jules, Martin, can you please get so-and-so on the show? And I will do my best. And as those of you who have been longtime fans know, my best is usually good enough, and I get them on the show.
Yep.
So just ask. But yeah, we've had like a 30% growth in the fan page, which is awesome, in just this week. So,
yeah, we broke 1,000, so woohoo!
Yeah, we broke 1,000 way quicker than we were going to. A weird little side note. Not even weird, but Jules, you have to get this for Indy because what you were
saying. I just grabbed it when I saw your note.
it's pretty cool, I think. I haven't been able to use it yet on a live race, but I got the actual MotoGP.com application for my new Droid phone to replace the piece of dookie that I had down at Laguna. And it's not the high-zoot one or anything, but it does exactly what I need it to do. And I'll trade it in when I need one better, but that ain't going to be for some time. Yeah, this one actually looks pretty cool. The thing that I really like about it, which is kind of handy and will be great for you as a photographer, is being able to follow the bikes around the track because you can tell when they're coming to your corner. So they have the little GPS stuff that will actually track all the bikes around the track.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool.
Rider. Andrew, the two pairs of Andrews out there, Mr. Wheeler and Mr. Northcott, I hope you guys are using this. Might be pretty handy too. You know what I was thinking, Jules? It would be so cool is if you could pipe the output, you know, like the little leader line that runs at the bottom of the screen across the top of your viewfinder.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't that be
bitchin'? Oh, man.
Actually say, I want this rider and have a countdown how quickly he'll be at your location based on GPS. We are totally geeking out.
You know what? At some point, I mean, there's already people that leave remote cameras out there and they're just sitting in the corner going, you know, shooting their thing and then they're looking over the other corner and pressing a button. I mean, at some point, I actually enjoy taking photos. So, like, I actually enjoy, like, being the anticipation of like, oh, I think I hear a Yamaha, you know. So yep. Yeah, I mean, it's cool, it's great, but you know,
you're old school.
I'm old school. I still miss film.
Hey, were you sporting a MotoGP POD sticker this week on any of your equipment?
Oh yeah, you bet.
All right, listen, I think that was a very cool show, and I'm looking forward to hearing it put all together. And then perhaps you or me, or you and Martin, or Martin and you, however it works out, we'll put together a show that you guys will probably see, hopefully, maybe a little bit early-ish next week, depending on how quickly we can get it up. Yep. And hopefully we'll have a little bit of news over the weekend. I can already think of a couple of things to talk about. Once again, we've got all of the links in the show notes. Want to thank everybody that over the last month or so has donated. If you'd like to do so as well, feel free to do it through the Facebook fan page. That makes sure it gets to incidental expenses such as Skype or whatnot. Or if you'd like to donate to the infrastructure of the show, you can always do it through MotoGPOD.com. And that will actually kind of help keep us afloat in a very different way. Very much looking forward to Jules, Indy.
Yes, Jim.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, figure if I get to two GPs in a year, I've set a record since like 1994. So that's good for me. And frankly, I'm really looking forward to going back to Indy, you know. And it's going to be hot. I hear it's going to be hot, 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 humid. So I'm going to REI tomorrow. I'm picking up some good wicking clothing, if you will.
Smart, smart, smart man.
All right, roll us out, brother.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Ciao.
Ciao.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.
Hello, one question for Ben. If you have Dennis weight, if you
have my weight the same as
yes, yes. If you beat Paul today?
No, but I think if I would have pulled in front of him when he was on his fastest lap, I would be on pole right now.